Piling into our electronic room here. We've got a recording notification. Everyone's just piling in. We're just going to let technology keep up with us here. All right, wonderful. The fact that you're here tells me that we are winning on the platform side. I'm so glad to see that everybody's finding their way into the navigation. And I'm so glad to see that we had an awesome crew in the networking session. So thank you so much for taking advantage of our incredible team supporting all the different ways to engage. So thank you so much. I'm here to introduce the amazing Colin Harding. He is the founder and president of Jaeger Consulting Group. For over a decade, Colin has held an executive leadership position and consulted in industries as diverse as retail, e-commerce, travel, and manufacturing. That's one heck of a portfolio. Colin has been coaching and consulting with clients, helping them to structure, to organize and execute and grow their businesses since founding Jaeger Consulting in about February of 17. And Colin has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in library and information science, including research in tacit knowledge and experiential learning. Colin combines his background in the psychology of the workplace and human learning behaviors with his systematic organizational approach and experience in executive leadership. So Colin developed this cool system called SAVE, which stands for Systematic Accountable Vision Execution. It's a leadership system to capture this approach and in a method that can be understood, adapted, and executed by any organizational leader. So Colin is inspired by the passion of the clients he works with, and he is motivated by their desire to support them and help them grow to achieve their business vision. Headquartered in Mississippi Mills, Jaeger Consulting Groups works with business leaders from local to international across all industries to help them deeply understand and refine the core of their business into an operational machine that allows all team members to execute on success. And through their work with small business leaders, they've built a systematic approach, SAVE, to tackling business operations with a focus on the key challenge of small business leaders, decentralizing leadership and decision-making. So without decentralized leadership and a systematic approach to executing on priorities, many small business leaders just simply cannot grow. And they are critically dependent on the limitations of time, attention, and effort of their founder or leader and other key leaders in the organization. So ultimately, Jaeger Consulting Group works on a simple idea that by applying a focused and practical business operating system, entrepreneurs and small business leaders can gain the competitive advantage, weather any storm, and scale up in any environment. Welcome, Colin. Here's his presentation called Decentralized Leadership.
Wow, that was fantastic. Thank you. I should just get you to enter rooms in front of me all the time and just warm people up. That was pretty good. So let me get my slideshow running here on this side, make sure it's on the right screen, and I'll jump into things. It's always fun getting Zoom to interact with PowerPoint. So let me know when you guys can see my screen. Are you guys seeing my presentation at this point? Fantastic. All right. So first of all, thank you, everyone. Thank you to the organizers of the Work Matters Summit. I'm very excited to be here. I'm one of those very annoying people who really loves what they do, which means it's sometimes fun to listen to me. Sometimes I go on and on. So hopefully I'll hold myself accountable here today to not ramble too much. But I'm very excited today to be here and to speak on decentralized leadership, which, as was just touched on, is kind of the core of a lot of this. And we're going to talk about why it's particularly a challenge for small and medium enterprise growth. So full disclosure, today is just going to be a complete recap of everything you learned in leadership school, you know, where you go to school for 2 years and all they do is teach you how to be a leader. And I am joking, of course, because that would be tremendously helpful and yet not a thing that exists for most of us, which is a little bit crazy when you think about it, because to advance in our career, for most of us, the vast majority of us, we are going to have to take on leadership roles. It's not a job that you can either sign up for or not to some degree. It's sort of a layer of accountability and layer of skill that gets applied to most of us, regardless of what career path we go through. And yet, some of us might, you know, buy books or get training or go and you know, get mentors to kind of get better at this. But really, considering it's a core skill set and it's critically important, it's kind of a little bit crazy that we actually don't have a leadership school that we should all be probably going through. So this is a particular challenge for leadership because, well, again, we didn't really get trained on the skills, but also as we went through our career for most of us, we're learning the core skills of our trade, whatever it might be. We're learning to be a better accountant and we're stepping up further and further through the accounting track. But as we do that, we are suddenly taking on leadership responsibilities. Now, some of the skills that we're learning as we're going through that core track are very complementary, right? We're learning some things day to day through our experiences in being a leader or just in the work of being, I'll pick on accountants for today, being accountants, some of it is really complementary, right? On the other hand, some of it is completely contrary. And I'll point to the skill of attention to detail. I have a client who's an amazing engineer. Some of the areas where he has great attention to detail are tremendously helpful to being a leader, right? He can dive in and he can really understand areas of the business that are not his core domain and really hone in to understand them, which makes him really effective sometimes. Having said that, he can also lead him towards micromanagement because attention to detail can kind of put you that way. So again, a lot of these skills that we're learning are either heading us kind of towards this or not. There's another problem here as well, which is that we have culturally, and I would almost argue just as a planet, an image of leadership that is not always particularly helpful. And it's definitely very narrow. So it's sort of a flawed narrow view, which is inspirational leadership. So I'm going to put up an image and you probably are going to be able to guess who I'm putting up, but it's Steve Jobs. So, you know, let's all break out our black turtlenecks and our New Balance sneakers and stand on stage and hold a clicker and we're leaders now, I guess, which is great. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Steve Jobs. He's amazing. And he's actually, when he gives those presentations, he's demonstrating a really great example of vision capture, capturing and sharing vision, which is a tremendously important part of the job of a leader. But it's not the only job of a leader. It's just the one that we kind of see and get presented to us. I'll throw up another image. It's the Roman general speaking to the army, right? So in reality, the Roman general really doesn't lead 5,000 people. I mean, ultimately he does, but day to day, his leadership is not walking around proselytizing to groups of 5,000 people. That's not what the job looks like most days. He'll have a smaller group, which work with smaller groups. He's engaged in lots of different behaviors, but this is the sort of idea that we have in our head of what leadership looks like. Then we don't have formal training and skills a lot of the time that have necessarily led us here. And again, then we're stuck in the job. Now, I'm going to talk about owner-operators for a minute. I know not everyone here is owner-operator. They're a big group of who I work with, but they form a large number of small and medium businesses come from owner-operators. And there's a particular challenge that I want to hone in on. And if you're an employee right now and you're kind of, I'm asking you to feel a little bit bad for owner-operators and you're like, just bear with me for a minute because it's not always always a fun job. So it's particularly challenging for owner-operators because they did not necessarily come up through a formal business leadership framework, right? So a lot of people were really great, just like the accountant who became a better accountant and took on leadership. A lot of owner-operators really built their own job of running this business. And they sort of wake up one day and they've got this terrible, terrible job, which no one really would want if they actually see what it looks like most of the time, of running a small or medium business. It's really challenging. So it's sort of this job that you kind of wind up falling into a little bit. And when you are a leader who comes up through an existing organization, you have a framework to follow, right? If you don't have leadership skills, but you had an accountant, a senior accountant who was your boss ahead of you, you can kind of just step into it and kind of do what they did. And organizationally, everybody's probably going to be okay with it because they were okay with the last person. Or you move into a new job, you move across organizations and maybe you learn some new skills there, but you can still pull upon your experience of that core domain and growing from the leadership skills you were kind of working in. You're fitting into an existing box to some degree. Whereas owner operators, why they do this, I don't know. It's a terrible job. I'm one as well, so I know it's a terrible job. We're fully accountable for the organization, every part of it, right? If it succeeds, yay, we're a genius. If it fails, it was probably our fault. Even if it wasn't our fault, well, you know, who was going to solve it? The owner, right? we're expected to provide leadership to every area of the business. If you came up as an accountant, you might be able to provide amazing oversight and leadership to the financial controls. Marketing might not be your forte. Well, guess what? Marketing meetings at 9 a.m., you better give them some direction, right? There's not really any getting off the hook of it. And fundamentally, even if you came through the core work, running a lemonade stand, and I always go back to the example of a lemonade stand because I like to make things really simple and light and not overcomplicated and all sorts of jargon all over the place. If you run a lemonade stand, you have the world's best lemonade stand, and you've got this tremendous opportunity to grow a business now, the job of running one or even 10 or even 100 lemonade stands is fundamentally different as it scales up. It is a completely different job. And again, some of the skills you learned along the way are going to be tremendously helpful. You will absolutely understand what makes great lemonade, how to handle customers a certain way, right? And you will understand the business probably like no one else, hopefully. But it doesn't mean that you have experience running a corporation that runs 100 lemonade stands. It's very different. And unfortunately, sorry, again, it's 9 a.m., better be there. You have to do it because it's critically important. So there's my kind of spiel on why you should feel bad for owner operators. It's leadership is challenging for all of us. They've probably got the worst of it because it's a particularly challenging one. And it's important because that's where a lot of small and medium businesses are. They are owner operator situations. So let's talk about achievable leadership then. So one of my goals always is to take leadership out of the realm of aspirational idea of giving a speech somewhere and pull it into a job that can be done, right? So we want a job that can be prioritized, structured, and executed on. So in the great tradition of having an hour-long presentation and drastically oversimplifying things, I'm going to touch on three things that leaders absolutely have to execute on. One, provide vision, direction, focus. Call it whatever you want. Have to understand, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What is the why behind this thing? Second, pretty straightforward. It's probably the first one you would have guessed. We have to do the thing that we're supposed to do, whatever the domain is. If it's the business better be effective. If it's the marketing team better be very effective. Whatever the core work of that leadership area is, we have to excel at it. There's an expectation. If we had someone who was amazing at giving speeches, clear vision, created leaders all over the place, but performance was dipping 15% every week, we wouldn't say that they were a great leader, right? Pretty straightforward. Finally, create more leaders. And this is maybe the one that people don't see coming quite so much. This is like the pyramid scheme of leadership, okay? The goal is to create a leader who's going to create two more leaders who are each going to create more leaders. And we're going to talk a lot about leadership, decision-making, and accountability. And what we're really trying to do is distribute that leadership throughout the organization. So touching on leadership mindset for a second, these are the three ideas that I want everyone who I work with and certainly everyone listening today, these are the three ideas I really want firmly lodged into your brain whenever you're in a leadership position. One, you have to think of yourself and your job as fundamentally to make other people more effective. That is the job. And we lose sight of it. And that might sound obvious, but we lose sight of it all the time. We have to think about the fact that it's less about you and it's more about building, supporting, and optimizing people plus systems. Okay, so we need to create a system for getting things done that is focused on the point of the thing, that is directed towards what we're trying to achieve, and makes individuals, which is where work is ultimately done, work effectively within a system. Our job is to support, coach, and develop that effective system. And finally, everybody else can lose sight of what we're supposed to be working on. They can just forget that we're, you know, they can all be pushing the big red button once an hour and saying, look, we're pushing the button twice as hard as we used to. Yay, progress. You can be the only, you have to be the only person if everyone else forgets that there's a reason we're pushing that button. And maybe it doesn't make sense to push that button anymore. Maybe nobody knows why the button's being pushed in the first place. You are the one person who cannot lose sight of that. And again, pointing you back to building people and systems that is really moving the needle. So let's play out two scenarios to kind of tease at this a little bit. Let's talk about scenario number one, which is, okay, so you're a leader. You have day-to-day activities that you engage in, some of which are leadership, some of which are core work, a lot of which are probably core work. So let's say you push really hard. You kill it this week. You work a little bit of overtime. It's like a 48, 50-hour week. But boy, did you move the needle. You are 30% more effective. You just deliver 30% more than you would normally give in a week. I mean, Fantastic. First of all, kudos. You moved the needle. Here's my big question for you. What about everyone else? What happened to everybody else on your team? You went into a hole. You went, oh boy, I really got to get this thing done. I'm going to write the best, world's best marketing copy ever. Look at it. It's beautiful. It's 30% better than usual. Second, is this sustainable? Okay, so you achieved 30% better performance. Don't really know what happened to everybody else during that time. And do we really want a system that relies on working 48, 50 hours a week to achieve, you know, 30%? 30% is a lot, by the way. So let's play out a different scenario then. So in this one, instead, let's spend our time focusing on other people. So what if we didn't focus on ourselves at all? Instead, we focused on making each member of your team, let's say you've got an 8-person team, each 5% better, which is not a lot, by the way. And you can absolutely do it within a sustainable week. You don't need people working overtime to be 5% better. I'm not talking about efficiency, by the way. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm scribbling notes twice as fast. It's about being more effective. It's the things we choose to work on, whether we're truly moving the needle, right? So you did whatever it took. Maybe it was realigning someone who was off base. Maybe it was connecting someone with someone they were getting disconnected from and they were starting to miss the point. Whatever it was, you somehow managed to get them 5% better improvement. So fantastic. We've got 40% improvement on the week. More importantly, probably, everybody works a sustainable week, which, you know, is pretty important, especially nowadays. I'm sure it's coming up a lot in conversations today. Can I pause for a second? I want to make sure I'm sharing the correct slideshow. Is it the full one? We're good? Okay, good. Sorry, it's looking weird on my side. So the last thing, this is where it gets really starts to blow up when we talk about decentralized leadership. What if each person on your team, your 8-person team, also led a team of 5? And what if they also focused? And what if they just got 1% improvement out of each one of their team members, which is not asking a lot, let's be honest, 1%. Well, 8 people times 5 people on each one of their teams, we've got another 40% for free right there for a little bit of focus. So the reason I use this example, because I know that it's very difficult to say, well, what is 40% improvement? What is 5% better? It's a little bit fuzzy. You know, it's different for every company. And we wish that we could measure business value that easily. But conceptually, you can achieve so much more through empowering other people on your team who can then potentially even empower those beneath them and have trickle-down impact so much more than you can ever just put your nose down and push on the work. And that's something that we might know, but our jobs are largely structured around getting distracted away from that. And it's a really hard job. And frankly, we don't usually get sort of pats on the back for being a great leader. It happens sometimes, but day to day, a lot of the things that we get pat on the back for is very, very narrow and focused. So we have to choose as leaders to be the change and to focus those priorities and empower other people who will probably get a bunch of the credit, by the way, and, you know, great. So let's now then talk about what I call the leadership bottleneck. A bottleneck is basically the natural constraint of any system. So if you picture a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi, there's a reason it comes to a point at the top, right? It's so that when you go to pour it, you're not, you know, pouring this massive thing that's going to spill everywhere. It is an intentional design to limit how much comes out of a system so that it suits its purpose. So any system of any kind has a bottleneck. It's just a natural constraint. There's always the narrowest point of where things move through. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes we're intentional about it. We use it a lot in like manufacturing design and things. We just pay a lot of attention to the bottleneck. The important part about the bottleneck, though, is it doesn't matter how well the work is being done and how much you're producing unless you can impact the bottleneck. So if we are producing widgets as a company and we're producing 50 widgets an hour, and then we're handing them over to, let's say, the owner operator of the business who says, the system I'm running is that every single item has to come through me. I do the quality control. By the way, I've got a lot on my plate, so I can only check about 1 an hour. It doesn't matter that we're, as a business, capable of producing 50 widgets an hour because our capacity to get it out the door is 1 an hour. So bottlenecks are incredibly important to us in systems because we always want to be aware of what is the natural constraint. And we're frequently looking to do one of two things or both things usually. We're looking to reduce the amount of things that are going to the bottleneck that don't have to. And second, we're trying to improve the capacity of the bottleneck. So the leader says, you know what? I can actually get 2 done an hour. I'm capable of that. I grew an extra arm. And by the way, I'm going to decrease the amount that comes to the bottleneck. I'm going to install an assistant manager who's going to pre-check for quality, all these things. And if it's just a slam dunk, it bypasses me. It goes right out the door. If it's questionable, they're not quite sure, then it comes to me. So we are improving the capacity of the bottleneck and we're reducing the amount of unnecessary things going to the bottleneck. So that's generally how we do it when we do systems thinking. The reason I bring it up is this is why decentralized leadership or leadership is the big challenge of small business growth, because so many businesses are narrowed to a bottleneck in vision, decision-making, and accountability at the leadership. Typically at the top, frequently throughout the organization, but especially typically at the top. I have a client who used to work with years ago. I sat down with him and looked at his numbers and he said, I need your help because no matter what, I know I need help with leadership within the areas of the business. I know I need more structure, but basic thing is we've been hitting exactly $1.8 million a year for 4 years in a row. It's crazy. And I looked at the numbers and it's 1.8, 1.81, 1.79. It was nuts. I've never seen it. And I went, yeah, this is exactly the capacity of your business right now. And, you know, he added salesmen and it didn't work and he tried other things, but it just kept coming down to 1.8. So I sat down and I said, first thing I'm going to do is run my own numbers, see how you're going to perform on the year. I ran the numbers. I sat down and I said, listen, my projections based on the historical averages of the last 4 years, you're actually going to produce 1.65 million this year, maybe a little bit less. So bad news. It looks to me like you're actually, it's not stable. It's actually sliding off. And he went, no, it's not. I went, okay, tell me why. He said, because by the end of this quarter, I would have noticed that. And then I'm just going to run over to sales and I'm going to chase sales like crazy and it'll pop back up and it'll finish it. You guessed it, 1.8 million. And I went, okay, great. So that's a typical situation, not always exactly that clean cut. But what he's really describing is when I see a fire in one area of the business, I run and all my bottlenecking capacity runs over there for a little while and it solves this area. And then I walk away from it and it'll slowly fall off. There's always a certain amount of that that happens in leadership. We always sort of, wherever we shine our flashlight, we will get improvement. But what we're talking about is a lack of sustainability there. And this is pretty typical. So the problem is, if vision, decision-making, and accountability are the bottleneck, then they become the limit to growth, right? If only one person can do these things, will do these things, and they hit 1.8 million, their capacity as a person to be as effective as they know how to be in the way they know how to be it becomes the capacity for growth of the business. Full stop. Now, if we were able to split that person in two, wow, we're able to scale it up. It's not really that easy. And that's why we make jokes like, oh, I wish I could clone so-and-so, because that's the easy thing we can imagine. But it really becomes a fundamental issue that we're trying to overcome. So enter the concept of decentralized leadership, right? So what we're trying to do with decentralized leadership is taking that accountability and decision-making and funneling it throughout the organization, breaking it down to different stages where we don't have to have everything come to one bottleneck. Instead, we're increasing the capacity of the entire organization. So first thing is absolutely has to be done in alignment with the business goals and focus. You can't just say to people, okay, everybody make your own decisions now, I guess. And they go, ah, okay, what do we make again? Widgets. Okay, great, wonderful. It doesn't work quite that well, right? The easiest way to do this, and one of the fundamental things, because we have leadership at levels of the organization, whatever level of leadership you are within an organization, what we try to do is establish why that level and role exists. What is the fundamental why behind this thing? And that is ultimately accountability of that department or whatever it is, but let's assume it's a department in this example. If you are the operations customer service department, your job might be, or the department's job might be, to create raving lifelong fans. Okay, there's our starting place. Wonderful. Okay, so Joe, the head of customer service, you are accountable for creating raving lifelong fans. And Joe goes, well, I'm one person. You go, you're right. That's probably a lot for you to handle. So you're going to need to bring on a team. The thing is, that accountability doesn't go away. You're still accountable for that. You're going to ask someone to take on some work to help you better achieve that, but you are still ultimately accountable. And what we try to do is essentially say, if this is the role, let's not define this role as responsibility of, okay, go over there and push this button every hour for me so that I can focus over here. It's, can I take a level of accountability, a piece of what I own? And can I ask that you create a raving lifelong fan on every call you're on. Because I can't ask you to be accountable for Sarah's calls. That's ridiculous. But you can be accountable for your calls to this level. And we try to have that conversation of what are we fundamentally trying to achieve? And what does every single role contribute? What is the highest level of accountability we can bring to it? So I'll briefly touch a little bit more on accountability versus responsibility, because it's a really important concept. It's the difference between doing a thing and owning the thing, right? If someone is responsible for something, generally they will do it when they're told, or if they're told do this once an hour, you know, they're going to do that. If the button breaks and someone's still pushing it every hour, we don't call them and go, what the heck? The button's not doing its job. You're not doing your job. And they go, what are you talking about? You have demanded of me. I mean, one time I skipped pushing the button in 1 hour and you like yelled at me. It was horrible. I'm never going to miss pushing the button again. They go, yeah, but the rat chewed through the line. It's not doing anything. Oh, I didn't notice. I was just so focused on pushing this button. That is not them failing. You've asked them to be responsible for executing on an action. You wanted them to be accountable to spot that this is not actually what needs to be done anymore, but you haven't designed their role around. And we, in small businesses, large businesses, all over the place, define roles and manage people according to responsibility all the time. Look at every job description you've ever looked at. It's not you're accountable for these results. It's usually, yeah, you're going to be pushing a button a lot of the time. You know, sometimes you're going to switch out the button. You're going to liaise with people talking about the button and what color it should be in the future. It's not about owning the results. It's about doing the thing. And it is an easier thing to do than doing the hard work of defining accountability and putting in place better leadership. Accountability is critical to decentralized leadership because it's about decision-making. You cannot say to someone, you are accountable for the results of this. By the way, you can make no decisions to influence what happens, right? That's actually technically how you define failure for someone. If you want to make someone fail, you give them all responsibility, no control. That's like a classic statement. That's how you, if you want someone to fail, do that. And yet we're doing it all the time. We don't intend to, but we do it all the time. So the other thing is that accountability, again, we cannot just say, make sure this doesn't happen. The job of leadership doesn't end at saying, here's what accountability looks like. Thanks. Have a great day. We have to map it. We have to systematize it. We have to communicate it. We have to coach it and support it. It is an ongoing job. It's why it's a 40-hour week job and not just giving a 5-minute speech at the top of the pulpit and then being done, because it's your job to support it and make sure it's effective and give it, you know, the food and the water that it needs to be as good as it needs to be to put people to work. So when we nail decentralized leadership, when we really kind of kick it off, hit it running, and we have some success with it, these are some of the business outcomes that we start to get. And then I'm going to talk about individual and team outcomes. So we definitely get clarity of goals and vision at every level. There's a better understanding of the why behind everything. We're going to create leaders at every level because we're going to define accountability. We're going to give people decision-making power. We're going to get better delivery on objectives, priorities, and better ability to say no to the wrong things. And that's one of my favorite ones, because a lot of the work that I do is helping people create focus. And when we say, this is what we do, this is how we do it, this is how we assess whether we're performing, we know exactly why. Someone comes along and says, look at this shiny thing. And you go, no, I know exactly that that's not a thing worth doing because I have really good clarity and focus on what we are supposed to be doing. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, sustainable growth becomes available because now we have taken that bottleneck and we've distributed it. We've allowed decision-making, effective decision-making to happen at different levels and teams throughout the organization. So we don't have to double the number of Joe the owners in order to create that. We now have a system which can be scaled. Now, whether we're successful in scaling is going to rely on how effective our sales team is at bringing in new customers, all the normal things, but we're not restricted by a capacity problem in leadership. So next is the team outcomes. And I'm going to touch on this quickly, and then I'm going to move to the next slide where I dig a little bit deeper into it. I added the next slide last night, and I want to talk about it. So hopefully I can collect my thoughts a little bit well. But big picture on team outcomes is we get more engaged employees. We get a better sense of who fits and who will be successful. We get reduced turnover of strong staff. You will absolutely lose poorer performers because they will be held accountable to something that they're not passionate about, they don't get, or they don't really just want to be successful in, right? We're going to give them a seat at the table. And if they don't really want that seat and they were here to push a button because that's what they want, they're going to be less happy. They're going to perform poorer and they're going to move on to somewhere else they could be more successful. The better people who are better fit are going to be happy to get that seat at the table, more involved in the work, more invested, and they're going to become your leaders of tomorrow. Work becomes more challenging, more meaningful, and a better sense of purpose. And that's where I'm going to move on to the next slide, because I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had right now. And I think it's really relevant to what we're doing here at Work Matters. COVID showed us what lack of leadership can look like. There's some companies that really stepped up and knew what they were about, and it really showed up and employee engagement went up. It also showed us what happens when leadership doesn't show up. I was in a disappointing situation to watch some leaders not step up because they felt like they didn't have the right message for people right when COVID was first hitting. There was sort of this response of, we don't really have a plan to show them, and we don't really want them to see that, so we're just going to quietly sit in the background and say, keep spinning your wheels, even though everybody knew that there was nothing to do. A bunch of the work had dried up. And that's because they were stuck in this idea of aspirational leadership. They're like, we want to give this big empowering speech and goals and direction, say, let's go do this. And it wasn't there. So instead, they didn't show up. And what people really needed at the time wasn't necessarily big speeches or tons of clarity. I mean, if you'd come in the first 2 weeks of COVID hitting and everybody knowing what was going on and it was really scary and sales were down, and you said, well, we've got everything figured out, we'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I would have called BS on that. That would have been pretty, pretty surprising and probably not believable. I'll make a parenting analogy, and forgive me because I'm not trying to, you know, condescend that employees and leaders is like a parent-child relationship. But sometimes being a parent, it's not about having the answers. It's just sitting next to them and letting them work through a difficult situation. And sometimes as leaders, we don't have to have the answers. A lot of the time we don't have the answers. What we do is we bring people together. Some of them might have the answers. We might work through the answers together. And if we don't, at least we're on the same page. We know what we know. We know what we don't know. And we've created an environment where we can move on. And that was either present or not present in a lot of companies. The other thing that really jumped out at me is I was getting calls of, we don't know whether, you know, this company over here is doing this. This company over here is doing this. We're not sure which we should do. Should we do this? We do this. And then there was other companies that were hitting the ground running and saying, yeah, we were doing this and now we're doing this. And it didn't seem nearly as painful. And the fundamental difference between them was the degree to which they already understood themselves as a business and the degree to which they had an empowered workforce that was ready to adapt to change. So one of the things that accountability gets us is a focus on what we are trying to achieve. So when something changes, we are already primed to say, oh, pushing the button doesn't work anymore, but that's fine. Pushing the button didn't work sometimes and we tried a different thing. We're always looking at what it was meant to do. We're going to try something else. And if we have a clarity of business vision, a really solid understanding throughout the organization of what we are trying to achieve and what we're about, and what makes us different from our competitors, it makes it a lot easier to spot the, should we do X? Yeah, absolutely, we should do X. It's the logical way to translate what we do and what makes us different and better into this environment that works. We shouldn't do Y because, well, that makes no sense. That's for the people who are competing on price. We're not competing on price. We're talking about community. Let's bring the community together in Zoom, whatever it might be. So the last thing in this that I think is really a missed opportunity is we have a lot of workforce after COVID, after going remote, and even just younger generations of workforce. And I think a lot of people look at these people and the things that they're asking for, and I hear the word entitlement sometimes. And it drives me crazy because sure, there's entitled people out there. There have been in every generation for the record. But a lot of what people are asking for is meaning in their work and to be involved in decision-making and to have the flexibility. When you say, it doesn't matter where I do my job, and sometimes that's true and sometimes it's not, by the way. Some jobs need to be in person, some don't. But a lot of the time it's true. It doesn't matter where I am to do my job. Shouldn't I just be trying to achieve X? They're trying to have a conversation about accountability and say, how about I just get this thing done to the best of my ability? And we focus on how to best do that. And when we say, no, sorry, I need you here because the button's here, we're fundamentally missing the point. And so there's the remote kind of turn this on a little bit for us. And then I think the younger generations are really good at turning this on because they want more meaning from their work. And I think we all do, but I hear it a lot from the up and coming generations of workers. We blow it off sometimes. I hear it blown off as they only want to work for companies that are saving the world. It's like, no, they don't. It would be really nice. I would love to work for a company that's saving the world, by the way. That sounds great. Sign me up. But it's not always about solving the big problems of the world. It's knowing that you belong to something and that you're contributing to something and that there's a purpose behind what you're doing and that you contribute to that, that you're not just pushing a button in a room and who knows what it does. All of that is a tremendous opportunity to hear it and go, yeah, let's have a conversation about accountability. Let's talk about how you probably, if you understood this better and could be more involved, could find new, better ways of helping us. So don't miss out on that opportunity, I guess, is what I'm getting at. I'll pause for a second. Are there any questions or anything that popped up that we want to address now before I move on? Good, Shayla? All right, fantastic. Thumbs up. All right, so that's me making the big case. Let's move into the three keys to decentralized leadership. Yet again, me oversimplifying something very challenging, but this is if you really want to hit it running and you're going to attempt to do this with your team, there's three big pieces you have to provide. Clarity of vision, measure what matters, manage to accountability. So clarity of vision is tremendously important. This is the why behind everything. So I've talked a lot about accountability and I've talked a lot about decision-making. Right? Well, decision-making, correct and incorrect decisions, come from an understanding of why, right? When someone makes a decision and you go, great choice, it's because there's a why behind it that you agree with. And when they do the wrong thing, you go, what are you thinking? Of course, the decision was over here. There's an underlying why of what is right or wrong. And the thing is, a lot of us aren't sharing that. Right? And we can't just say, and we get the knocks at the door going like, I need you to make a decision on this, boss. They don't know the why behind the decision-making. You're holding it close to yourself, right? We have to share. So we need to understand, why does our area exist? Why do our jobs exist? What are the fundamental things we're trying to move the needle on? What makes us different? If that's not there, you'll never get people able to make correct decisions. Measure what matters is directly tying accountability. So again, not responsibility, but accountability, the what are we trying to fundamentally achieve to the measures we look at to see whether we're making progress, right? If we say, you know what, forget about the button fine, you know, but the button was really just closing a door. Did anybody know it was closing a door, by the way? Great. So, it turns out we work in pest control and that door button is to close the door so the raccoons don't get it. None of us knew. Now we know. How are we going to measure whether we're keeping the pests out? How many times we push a button per hour? It's like, well, maybe we should be measuring whether any pests are getting in. Can we measure that? Is there a way of measuring closer to the point of the thing? Otherwise, we're just going to measure how many times we push a button an hour and we're still going to get the same results. We're going to have these responsibility conversations of, congratulations, everyone. You know, we really hit the button a bunch of times. Nothing fundamentally changes unless we can directly tie the fundamental underlying purpose of why we're doing the thing with our measures. What usually happens when I do this work with people, by the way, is they're really excited because they go, here's my scorecard. And I'm like, look, I did my due diligence. And I look at it and I go, this is great. This is a leading indicator. This is a lagging indicator. Wonderful. But there's usually, it's not that they're bad. It's that some of them are better than others. But there's usually an area of accountability that's fundamentally missing from it. So we might break a department down. I'll give you an example. I have a client where our projects are successful is sort of the mission statement of the department. And we break that down into five distinct areas. And when we went through it, we had great measures for three of them because they're pretty traditional measures. It was like on time, on budget, and I think quality. But we had these two other areas where we said, well, we don't want to burn people out. If we did that, while burning people out, that would be a problem. So we had these sustainability pieces in there to say, we want to make sure that we've got a healthy workforce. And then we had a portfolio perspective where we were talking about, we're doing this across projects and we can really adapt to what's coming. And it turned out that we just had no good measures that were in any way tied to those concepts. So what we had to do was say, okay, let's add these in. had we not done that, we would have been reinforcing with people, listen, accountability falls in these five key areas, but like, you're only going to hear from me on three. Okay. Which basically is the same as saying two of them don't matter. And to that point is managed to accountability, which is a really important concept. It's basically, if you do all this work and you say all this, and then you handle people the exact same way tomorrow, and you go, guys, we've fundamentally cracked this egg. We understand that the button has been opening this door and closing this door all the time. Turns out we're in pest control. This is amazing. Great work, everyone. And then they come in tomorrow and you go, all right, so how many times did we push the button today? And they go, whoop, nope, that doesn't work. And then someone slips their finger off the button and you go, you failed to push the button. And go, yeah, I know, but I boarded up the window that was open. And they go, doesn't matter. Why didn't you push the button? If we go back to managing and leading and having coaching and conversations that are still focused on that level of work, we're taking decision-making and accountability away from it. It's all moot. You say, I'm going to empower you to make these decisions. Ask questions instead of giving answers, right? It becomes about coaching and it becomes about letting people operate at that level. And this is where I really see the rollout go wrong a lot of the times. We have these conversations, then they say, hey, the button's broken. Our question should be, okay, great. What are we going to do about it? I might already have five ideas, by the way, but I want them to be reinforced that, like, no, remember, your job is to keep the rodents out. And they go, yeah, no, I already have a plan for it. We're going to do this, and this. Fantastic. Sounds good. Do you need help with that? No, great. But we have to have these conversations at the accountability level, or it all is very quickly moot and nothing really changes. So we have to manage people to that accountability level. And that's really hard to do when you have the answer. And it's also really hard because you're going to have some people on your team who are really high accountability and you have a ton of trust for them. And then you got these other people over here, and it's going to be really tempting when you're busy to go, ah, here, I'll fix it myself. And you go, well, guess what? You just guaranteed that they're staying right here. You need to coach them up to here. That's part of the leadership job, is to create new leaders. And no one will ever thank you when you do that job well. No one might even notice when you don't do it well. So again, you have to be the person that remembers the point of the thing and manages to accountability. How'd I do on time? Am I too long? Was I too long? Did I go long-winded?
Oh, it was magically perfect. Thank you so much, Colin. Incredible timing. In fact, you're ahead. You're ahead, not only on budget, but the leading indicators of success say that it was super entertaining as well. Fantastic. Thank you so much. That was incredible. Thank you. So like we did in the previous session, everyone, you can pop into the chat and drop me a line at the moderator, Shayla line in the blue box. If you do that, basically I'll pose the question for you anonymously so that you can ask the tough ones. And then if you would like to verbalize your question, if you feel comfortable with that, please drop into your reactions menu in the Zoom navigation bar. It's the smiley face with the plus sign by the eyebrow. And you can pop in there and click raise hand. And we're going to see that little hand come up and I'll call you out and ask you to unmute. Wonderful. So we'll just wait and see here, Colin. But you know what was so interesting that I'd like to touch on before we get our first question is how Emery's talk intersects with yours so beautifully on the level of trust. Because you know what's so powerful about decentralized leadership is that you really have to trust your team and that you made a good selection. And I call that the picker, you know, that we get to pick as the leaders. And so that's incredible how you were able to describe sort of the next step if we can establish that trust. That's great. Absolutely. Okay, I've got Rob here. He's ready to pose a question. Rob, I invite you to unmute and pose it directly to Colin. Thank you.
Hi there, Colin. Thanks for your talk. So I'm thinking about how a traditional leadership model would be, you're the one steering the ship, and you know, maybe you even want everybody to know where the ship's going so they can help you get there. And then you're talking a bit about how instead of offering the solution, instead of saying, here, we got to go here, everybody, you know, let me help you get the ship pointed there. You're talking about maybe asking questions so that the people that are helping you get there, you know, form that decision on their own. So like I'm thinking about how do I turn this around and, you know, bring this kind of ideas into my organization. And, you know, like the first thought that comes to mind is to create some kind of PowerPoint or get a whiteboard and kind of direct everybody at the new way we're going to do it, which is kind of the old way. So I wondered if you could maybe talk for a second about how to implement, you know, a new way of leading.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the interesting part is you still have that responsibility to create vision, right? So the goal is not to get people to pick their own vision nearly so much as it is to, I usually describe it as, it's not creating vision. It's, if we think of it from accountability standpoint, it's not go do the thing. It's make sure everybody understands the vision. So if you give a presentation and 9 out of 10 people understand, oh, okay, this is what we, you know, where the organization is pointed towards, and one person doesn't understand, it's still your job to chase down that person and make sure they get it, right? So it's not about handing over necessarily the vision to everybody. It's about actually following a lot of those conventional pieces of, we still need top leadership to create the highest level vision for the organization. We need that to trickle down structurally, though. The problem is that we have a tendency to have a fundamental breakage between, okay, as an organization, if I'm the CEO and I'm giving a town hall lecture, and I use the term lecture on purpose, this is where we're going. We want to be at this dollar value if we're sharing it. We hope to achieve these three key goals. Okay, everyone go back to your desks and have a great, have a great day. We still haven't empowered people to make decisions throughout the organization to move towards that, right? The existing decision-making structure is still whatever it was prior to this meeting. What we have to do really is go through this exercise of accountability mapping throughout the organization. So if we already have within the organization, if top leadership, let's call it the CEO just to be simple about it, if the CEO really has a clear vision, and so we've captured who we are, why we do what we do, how we do it, what makes us profoundly different, all of that is really clear. Definitely we need to share it with the organization. But then we need to sit down with our leadership team and say, okay, do you understand this? What is your contribution to each one of those areas? And coach each of those business areas and the leaders of those business areas to map their accountability directly to it so that they can make the best business decisions. They, in turn, still need to do that with the members of their team. So it's kind of like we're rewriting job descriptions around accountability, trickling down from the top. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't have bottom-up leadership where people can't do this, but it's a lot easier when that vision is captured at every level. So I gave the example of the operations leader. The job there was they can't just create out of thin air their vision for the business, right? We're going to make widgets suddenly tomorrow. They really need to take that from the top leadership of the company, whether they're participating in it or not, depending on what level they're at. But they can sit down with every single role group or person on their team and really recapture that for those people and say, listen, this is fundamentally what the job looks like and why it looks like this way. And I'm going to change the way that I'm measuring it. And we're going to have better conversations around it. And we can do that at the one-on-one level. So if you're working in an organization where you don't have the ability to influence change, you can take your best interpretation of the business vision, which hopefully they've done a decent job of giving it to you. You can go run with that within a department and have better conversations and say, this is what we're fundamentally going to try to achieve. This is what I'm going to ask of each one of you in delivering that. Did that answer your question?
I see a nod. Well done, Holland. Thanks. Thank you so much, Rob, for your awesome question. It's that first step, right? It's the first step. How do I take that first positive step into the action? That's awesome. I love a good kickstart. So I've got a couple questions rolling into the chat here, Colin. And so many of the employers that are here with us today have seasonal work or youth workers that kind of come in and out of the biz. So if they do work with a youth or a short-term seasonal worker, for example, how would you recommend sort of integrating this model into, you know, sort of more project-based employment perhaps?
Oh, I think there's a tremendous opportunity because nothing's more motivating than a limited term. Where most of us lose motivation, frankly, is the fact that we've been in the same job for 8 years and it's being done the same way. Seasonal work is tremendous. If you think about the project approach to things, right? When a really great project kicks off, everybody has this really clear sense of vision, right? This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is the term. It starts here. It ends here. These are the outcomes we're going to measure. We've almost, the way that we approach projects is actually a lot more diligent from an accountability standpoint than we do as an organization a lot of the time. So seasonal workers are very similar in that they come in, even if you're not using a limited term project where you're not, the entire organization is not saying, okay, we are operating for 4 months. And I'm not sure which scenario it is, but if it's everyone's working on 4 months, it's actually really easy, right? We can just treat the project within that box. But even if we're not, we're just taking on a limited number of people for that short period of time. It's actually very motivating to go through those exercises of really establishing this is what the project is, this is what it's trying to deliver, this is your role within it, and this is how we're going to have these conversations along the way. Like it's actually arguably a lot easier with seasonal workers. Their commitment to the organization can be lower, or often is lower, but we don't necessarily need to be deeply committed to something to actually, you know, care and contribute towards it. And a lot of the time, what we really need is not necessarily people to bleed for the company or the project. Oh, we just need them to work overtime and do a lot of, we just need them to care and to get it, right? If you can get over that idea of they get it, they will make their own decisions and they will contribute a little bit better to it. And by the way, when they see the needle move directly tied to their efforts, they're more likely to actually give a little bit more. So I would say when you've got those seasonal workers come in, take that opportunity that doesn't normally exist with employees to really draw a line in the sand and say, here's where it starts, here's where it stops. Let's have a conversation about what we're doing, fundamentally why we're doing it, how I'm going to assess your performance, where we hope to be at the end, what you're trying to get out of it, and can I ask you to make these types of decisions in order to influence these types of outcomes? And it can be tempting to think, well, this only works for people who are leaders. So if I've got someone who's picking up, you know, garbage in the parking lot, it's tempting to go like, well, this doesn't really apply to Jim. Well, the thing with Jim, who's cleaning up garbage in the parking lot, is we've probably told Jim, go clean up garbage once an hour, right? And then there's a big mess, raccoons come along. Nobody pushed the button and closed the door to keep the raccoons out. And there's a big mess out there. And we want to go, oh, Jim, why didn't you show up and clean it? Because I'm not asked to do that. I'm asked to clean up once an hour. If you explain to Jim, listen, we're trying to keep this entire area clean. We generally clean it about once an hour. But if you keep an eye on it, we might ask the question of, listen, if there's a special mess that pops up, how about Jody calls you to give you a heads up so you don't have to check on it every 15 minutes, but you can be more accountable to this. Like every single role of any type can be handled towards an accountability level if you support it. So I really take the opportunity, have those initial conversations with seasonal workers, really reframe it, not as a job description, but as what we're trying to achieve and what they're accountable for, and then pick those points along the way. All right, there's only so much I can get to in 45 minutes, but pick those moments where you have this cadence of conversations about performance. If there's measurement, great, there's measurement, but we can have these conversations along the way of how it's working and what they need, right? If they say, I can't do this because I have no decision-making power, or I don't have what I need, that's your job as a leader. It's not to make every decision. They're saying, I want to do better. I've spotted how I can do better. Please give me this. Your job becomes to unblock them, to give them what they need, right?
Golden, golden. I love it. It reminds me of a client we worked with, the summer camps, you know, and having the counselors all rally together for the ultimate outcome of the camper's experience. And what really mattered was that they went home tired, happy, and that they learned something, right? And so it was like,
that's the why.
As long as everybody batches out in that, we're good. That's absolutely great. Wow. So I have another question for you here in the chat, actually, Colin. And this is a really interesting question because the person's posing it from this perspective of performance management. And often we experience it to be quite a one-way street, yes. Accountability below. And so absolutely. This person's posing this question in the sense of how do we make it a two-way street or a two-way stream? And, you know, recognizing that the norm is sort of one directional.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a big one. So I'll answer it to the degree that I can within limited time, but absolutely. A lot of what I'm talking about here with decentralized leadership is accountability in all directions. So what fundamentally changes when you prioritize the job of leadership, and I didn't get into it too much, but because it's more related to some of the soft skills and other pieces, but those conversations become tremendously important. And something like the unblocking and removing, we usually call it removing obstacles, becomes a core consideration of the job, right? So there, those conversations, which, you know, whether they're one-on-ones or weekly meetings or whatever it might be, we're still doing the same job of asking of the people beneath us, forgive the expression, on the org chart to be accountable to that performance. But the conversations we're having hopefully are not about go hit this number or we're done. It's a healthier, you know, conversation than that, hopefully, of where are we at? Why are we there? What do you need? And the what do you need is perhaps the most important job of a leader. And I would say fundamentally, if they're not asking it, they're not doing their job, right? But that conversation, if they're not asking, what do you need in order to do it better? They're not giving you the support that you need, which is a fundamental failure of them to create a system and a people plus systems approach to actually letting people be successful. So if they say, I don't have what I need to be accountable to this, they start waving their hands saying, whoa, I have a problem. You're asking me to be accountable for this thing over here. I don't have what I need. I don't have the skills. I don't have the tools. I don't have the people, whatever it is. That's what we want. Like, as leaders, my job is to create the system and then coach the people through it to be effective. And they're doing my job for me saying, by the way, there's a breakage in your system. Thank you. That I absolutely need that. If I had to run around trying to find these things all the time, it would be everything I did. So fundamentally, if that conversation is not happening, the leader is not doing their job. Now, how you hold that accountable within the organization can be very tricky. And I would say that I wouldn't point to a single solution to say, oh, there's this management reporting structure where the CEO does, you know, quarterly meetings with every employee or anything specific like that. I've seen a lot of different systems where you have kind of that bypass loop. The most important thing, I think, is whether that conversation is happening and it's healthy, and whether it is about what can you do for me or what's happening, what do you need, and how can I help you? I don't know how well that answered the question. Best I can do right now, probably.
Well, it was really thorough. I really appreciate that, because it's really taking maybe your own onus on it, right? What do I want to be accountable to, and how do I probe into that? I love that. Thank you, Colin. We did have someone with a raised hand, and we do have time for your question. If you'd like to reappear, that's up to you. I will hold space for that. Great. Wonderful. Could you please unmute? I welcome Jody's question, please.
Hi, Jody. Hi, Colin. Thanks so much for your presentation. It was really great. My question is, I think, not an easy one, so that's why I hesitated keeping my hand back up. But our rural Ontario, rural Canada is experiencing skilled labor shortages. And so part of that work that's being done in our community is looking at recruiting newcomers to our rural communities, where we are a little less diverse. We want to grow. We want to become more diverse. We want to create work environments that are ready for a changing landscape in the employee makeup. And so from a leadership perspective, what piece of advice would you give to big L leaders, little L leaders in creating an environment? What efforts can be done collectively to ensure that EDI is being integrated cohesively for that changing landscape of employment?
That's a great question. I'll answer it to the degree that I can, because I won't claim to be an expert on that entire area, but I'll tell you what happens when we talk about core values quickly, and I'll try to keep it quick here. We talk about core values as part of developing vision. And one of the things that quickly shows up is people want to describe a situation in which everyone is the same. They start to say, well, we want people who look like this. And we always say, no, you need people who think and value certain things. You need people who think that the customer is the most important person in the universe. You don't need people who all came from the same school and the same school of thought. I have worked with people who a lot of their recruiting comes from like the same university in the same province, because it's a very focused, narrow program. And they wind up having people with a very similar worldview and experience. What I encourage people to do is, the more that you have a clear sense of what you are fundamentally trying to achieve, and then things like core values, which, you know, people kind of roll their eyes at them, but they're actually really valuable, an understanding of who is successful here? What are the belief systems that make you successful? If you have that, diversity on top of that is the most powerful thing you can do. Because again, we're looking for accountability and we're looking for decision-making. Good decision-making comes from a diversity of thought and having different solutions to different problems. So you should be, if you're a company, you should be desperately looking for people who are coming from diverse backgrounds, desperately looking for people with different life experiences. People get nervous about it because they don't know how to say, will this person fit into me? If you've done the work of understanding what your house looks like, what the foundation is about, get as much diversity as you can. You don't need to be scared of the idea that these people are going to be fundamentally difficult to integrate into the company or anything. These are people who with different experiences, they will solve problems for you. Thank you very much. Take it for free every day, right?
Amazing. Wow. My heart is glowing 10 sizes here with that response as someone who worked in that sector for a really long time. So thank you so much, Colin, for those incredible remarks and for your incredible talk today. I really appreciate all the insightful questions as well. And so we are about to start our lunch break. So we are encouraging everybody to take that screen break. You know, if you do need that time to rest, this is the time to do it. The networking option is closed during the lunch, but the trade booths are open. You can consume some of our Work Matters videos during that period of time. But ultimately, we'll see you back here at 12:30. Open up your main agenda and we'll be back for some sort of afternoon remarks and jazz hands to welcome our next speakers. So thank you so much again, Colin, and check him out at Jaeger Consulting anytime into the future. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.